Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the 25th episode of the Good Life Radio Program. Riding solo again, Justin and Larry have work. Chuck is on this crazy, insane diet lifestyle change. It's going to change his life. He's going to lose over 100 pounds. A Thursday afternoon episode, I must have an important guest on today. You're damn right I do. I'm beyond stoked for today's show. And to be honest, I'm actually a little nervous at the same time. I'm going to get into that in a second. It's a beautiful third day of May, the year 2012. The phone number is always 323-927-2966. I'll tell you why I'm a little nervous about today's show. I can interview any sports star, celebrity, former player, coach, ball boy from any year, from any sport, any country, and I'll know, and I can talk to him for hours about the sport. And it just flows. That's all I do is talk about sports. I'm going to a completely different genre today, and like millions of other people, I'm addicted to the show on Nat Geo, Locked Up Abroad. Maybe for the two or three people in the world who don't know what the show is about, it's a show where they reenact true accounts of people from all over the world, United States, all over the world, who've gotten caught, arrested, and jailed, usually for smuggling drugs in different countries. The show's awesome because it has the real person who was arrested. They're describing the entire story. And in the background, like over their voice, is the actor doing the whole acting of the show. Last Wednesday, the show premiered. And I really think it was one of the best episodes they've ever done. It was about a guy named Eric O'Day. He's an actor. He was in a ton of movies, a ton of TV shows. He was in Dude, Where's My Car? That's the one they prominently displayed during the show. He's in all these movies, and we're going to get to a story. He's going to be actually calling in a couple of minutes. But before that, I want to play a clip of his song that he wants to promote. We're going to play it a few times throughout the interview. You can get the songs on iTunes by searching Eric O'Day. It's E-R-I-K-A-U-D-E. Also on Amazon.com. And follow him on Twitter, at Eric O'Day. E-R-I-K-A-U-D-A-D-E. Let me play a song for everybody real quick, and then we'll get to him in a couple minutes when he calls in. So here's his song right now. It's called I Don't Think So. It's really catchy as hell. So here he is right now. Here's the song.
Down now, and then you shake it out. Gotta have you.
Okay, that was the first 2 minutes of the song. Like I said, go to iTunes, search E-R-I-K-A-U-D-E, follow him on Twitter, on Amazon. He's on hold. Now, before I put him on the air, like I said, I've interviewed Super Bowl champions, rookie wide receivers who are about to blow up, minor league baseball players, World Series champions, NBA. I've interviewed every sports athlete, and yet this is the most pumped I've been in a real long time to interview anybody. So without further ado, you saw him last week on Nat Geo's hit show Locked Up Abroad, my man, Eric O'Day. Eric, thank you so much for calling the show, taking some time out. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Always. How you been?
I'm doing all right. I got good. Life is wonderful. I've been dealing with a lot of haters, actually, lately, but I've gotten a lot of positive support. So that's, that definitely counters all that hatred.
Well, listen, before we even start that, hatred from the show?
Yeah, man. I don't, keep in mind the show is a 13-hour interview. I mean, what I did was I did a 13-hour interview in London, and they crammed it into a 45-minute episode. So, of course they're only going to take, like, the nuts and bolts and the highlights from that interview and make a show around that. But there was just so much more to the story that was never explained or talked about, and people love to fill in the gaps with their own imagination, and as you can imagine, their imaginations like to come up with the worst. So I've been dealing with that, but it's nothing new. It's nothing that I can't handle.
Exactly. Now listen, I watch Locked Up Abroad religiously. It's actually one of my favorite shows. 9 out of 10 times when I watch it, this is the truth. I roll my eyes. I'm like, okay, the guy's smuggling drugs, and he gets caught. That's just that you're taking that risk. You're taking that gamble. Yet your episode, it was one of the only, I think maybe one other one, it captivated me because for some reason I believe you. And I know you didn't, you had everything going for you. You're doing this. So I'm not going to give anything away. I want you to captivate my audience the way you did. So I go on IMDb.com. You're in a ton of movies, ton of TV shows. You're an aspiring actor in California. You're waiting around now, and you're a personal trainer in a gym. Now, start from there. You meet the guy, Ray. Take over now. You meet Ray in the gym, and what goes on?
I was working at a gym in Burbank in 99. I was 19 years old, and one of my job was I was a personal trainer. I was training different people several times a week. Ray was this fat, much older Armenian guy that, he wanted to get in shape, and I was in, the best shape of my life. I was playing football, I was working out, 6 days a week, and my goal in life was, I wanted to play football in the NFL. So, and I was also, I wanted to be an action hero and do stunts, and I was doing stunts, but acting for anyone is not ever full time, and you got to find jobs in between, and my job in between happened to be a personal trainer. I meet Ray, and he is hiring a lot of the people that are attending the gym. He's hiring mostly people like in college or in their early mid 20s. It's a very very long story, but it's a real roughly sum it up. Is he was having people travel around the world to import expensive leather goods to beat the import tax. And in doing so, he would give them a free trip and, some spending money. That spending money, $800, is what would cover hotels and food. And people were like, oh, it's all expenses paid. No, it's not. You got a budget. And, for me, it was a free trip. I mean, people just love to be like, oh, you did it for the quick cash and everything. I'm like, I would have done it for free. And I don't really know what by the time I came home, I'd spend a lot of money out of my own pocket. So the truth was I wasn't making anything. It was after working out with this guy for about nine months before I finally agreed to go on a trip for him. And it was because I'd seen so many other people making these trips, just coming back with great, wonderful stories about, their experiences. And yeah, I absolutely wanted to be part of this. And I'd gotten to really know this guy over this time, training him 3-4 days a week. And what finally did it was a girlfriend of mine at the time. She broke up with me right before Christmas, and I was really bummed. I didn't want to, I was really bummed, and it was showing at the gym. And And Ray was like, you know what, make you feel better, man. You get out of the country. You need to do a trip for me, man. And it was exactly what I needed. He was absolutely right at the time. I left that first time in 99. I went to Turkey. On the way back, I got to go to Sweden. And, I mean, it was everything he said it was going to be. He gave me a manifesto. I had to go out, and I picked up two extremely large suitcases full of packaged leather goods. I mean, they were very nice samples. Everything was very nice. His whole thing was the reason why he was having people travel the world to do this was because two reasons. You know, he wanted to make sure that everything was in good condition. He wasn't getting ripped off or anything. Also, he wanted to beat the import tax back into the U.S. because apparently there's a very big import tax. You know, when you get on an airplane and you have to sign that $400 or more worth of merchandise.
Sure.
We're apparently bringing back $25,000 to $30,000 for the leather goods. You know, I dated women who pay $4,000 to $6,000 for a small purse. So it's not that difficult to believe. And this guy was such a smooth talker. I mean, he owned businesses. He was very successful. He's just a very likable guy.
And also, Eric, you knew him for 9 months. That was my thing.
Because
a couple of people that I spoke to about the show, oh, why would he go? I'm like, listen, you know him for nine. If I know someone for 9 months, working out with him, training with him, or just being around them, you trust them. And it didn't seem legit. Now, the show only showed you going one time to Turkey. Did you make more than one trip with these leather goods?
Yeah. I got about half. I don't know. I was about to turn 20 when I went on my first trip.
Okay.
And then I was 20 when I went on my second trip. He wanted me to go on a trip, you know, every other week. He's like, if you want to keep making these trips, this is great. Even though, I mean, it was money coming out of my pocket, you know, because I wasn't making any. I mean, the money would cover the hotels and the food and everything, and it was cool to make trips, but I was working and I was also going to school and I didn't have time for that. But I loved the opportunity, and I definitely wanted to keep it open. So I was encouraging this job to everybody. I was encouraging it to a lot of my friends, and a lot of my friends went because of my recommendation. And that's the scariest thing, is a lot of people went because of my recommendation. I eventually was encouraging it to my brothers. I encouraged it to my brother Michael and his wife Erin at the time, and they wanted to go, but then they were moving to Hawaii, and you know, the Jays got, you know, stuck. They got stuck with their own life. So they just, you know, they're like, they really love the idea of having a free trip to Istanbul and exploring that part of the world. Finally, my brother Peter, he was like, I could really use $800, man. I'd love to make a trip. That'd be cool. Because it sounded like a dream damn job, you know, right place,
of
right time
it does.
Kind of job. And I was just so gung-ho by it. And by this time, I mean, this is 2001, and that year was the best acting year I had up until last year. I did 17 jobs. I was recurring on 4 different TV shows, and I just had all kinds of momentum built up. And I just got in a house with a good friend of mine who was a big time soap actor, and life was just which is great. And then 9/11 happens, and no one wants to make trips for this guy. I mean, everyone's just afraid to travel because of their imaginations, and you know. America's starting to realize just how much hatred there is for America. Before that, I never thought the world hated us. I mean, they wear our clothes, they watch our movies, you know, they try to imitate us in some sense. I thought that everyone liked us. And at that time, I still thought everyone liked us. I thought, even though the people, you know, even though what happened in 9/11 was extremely horrible, I didn't assume a whole, you know, culture was the same way. I just thought it was just a bunch of, you know, a couple of extremists, and you know, so I'm gung ho. I think I'm invincible. I'm a young guy and I'm adventurous, and nothing scares me. And but at the time, my brother, he wanted to make a trip, and when he found out that with 10 days to go that it was to Pakistan, and he called me up, he goes, Eric, I'm not going. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, Peter, you're making me look bad, because you know I put him in touch with Ray and everything. He goes, Eric, I'm not going.
It's your name out there, exactly, okay.
And he says, I'm not going to Pakistan. I go, no, it's not to Pakistan. And sure enough, I was getting mad at my brother because he was going to make me look like a douchebag. But then when I called Ray and I asked him what was going on, he goes, he completely played it down. He goes, look, I'm getting a really good deal because what happened 9/11. No one wants to travel for me. And, you know, your brother's going to be fine. I go, no, he's not going to Pakistan. He's very adamant about that. And I don't really want him to go anyways, you know, because
okay.
I'm pretty sure it's not safe over there. He was like, you know what, when you first heard about Turkey, didn't that kind of worry you? And he was right, it did, you know, because when you hear, you know, I'd never been outside the country before I went to Turkey. I assumed, you know, I did assume the worst. And it, and Turkey was absolutely wonderful. The people there are amazing, wonderful, nice, and I had a great time. So he used that also as a persuasion leverage because he was right. Turkey was wonderful. And then I was like, Turkey was great. He's like, look, at the bottom line, if your brother doesn't go, I'm going to lose a lot of money, man. And, you know, you really put me in a bad spot. And I'm like, I don't want to put him in that, but I did feel responsible. I felt guilty because, great, I vouched for my brother and he's backing out. Well, you know, I just finished filming the movie Scorpion King. I worked on that over the course of a year and a half, and then the very day before I left for Pakistan, I filmed the television show, The Andy Dick Show. I told Ray, you know what, I'll go because I did feel bad. I felt responsible. I said I'll go.
And Eric, it seems that Ray's a smooth talker. He can sell anything. It looks like, right?
Yeah, Ray was not just a smooth talker. He was just a likable guy. He was the guy that, you know, you didn't want to let down. At the time I thought the guy was one of my best friends. I really did.
And also, you don't want the well to dry up. If your brother doesn't go, he might put you on the back list, the shit list, and you might not get another chance to go on a trip again.
Well, I mean, I wasn't really thinking like that. I was just thinking I didn't want to let the guy down, you know. I mean, I was pretty sure the opportunity was going to stick around. I'd helped the guy so many times. I mean, by getting the people and whatnot, and I got nothing in return. You know, I just did it because I liked helping the people out and sharing a great opportunity. And you know,
the way I looked at it, where else can you travel the world? So now you go, you step up for your brother, for Ray, your friend. You go to Pakistan, and the way the show showed it. It wasn't like Turkey or anything. They put you in like a homeless motel. So you go to Pakistan. It seems like you had a horrible time. It was
sucked
horrible
from the beginning. One other thing is for him to like really convince me to go, like to let me know that I'd be safe. Because I was like, I said, if you're getting such a great deal over there, then you can FedEx everything back here. And he's like, Eric, you're going to be fine over there. I'm like, how am I going to be fine over there? They're bombing towers over here. He's like. He's like, bottom line, that's Afghanistan. We got our whole army over there. Pakistan's gonna be fine. I'm gonna have the guys that meet you show you a great time. They're gonna take you out. They're gonna introduce you to girls. And I'm young, and I'm like, oh, girls, hell yeah. You know, that's so I'm an absolute douchebag back in the day and now, you know. And I'm like, oh, girls, sure, why not? You know.
So, okay.
When I get to Pakistan, I mean, I thought it was good. I'm thinking Pakistan is desert, and I'm assuming it's going to be hot, so I did not dress for cold weather. I get there, it's freezing cold. I can see my breath just blowing in front of me, and I look like I'm chain smoking. And it was February when I got there, and the very first day, I meet his contacts at the airport. And the guys, you know, they got American accents and everything, but they're Pakistani, and they're really cool, friendly guys, but they're like, Ray messed up. I'm like, what do you mean? And they said, he was supposed to send you to Karachi. That's where the jackets are. Now we gotta drive to Karachi and drive back here. And I go, well, how long is that going to be? And they go, the guy's like, well, we'll be here before you leave. And I was like, oh, this sucks. So,
oh, God.
You know, that plan went out the window. Here I was thinking I was going to hang out with guys and show me a good time, keep me safe, you know, and that just absolutely sucked. I get to the hotel that they're bringing me to, and it's just a dump. The hotel is an absolute dump. They're telling me, don't go out, stay inside, place is not safe for Americans. And I'm like, are you guys serious? And the hotel is really bad, and it's the first time I've ever seen a squat toilet. And I'm like, what is this? There's no toilet here. They're like, it's a squat toilet. I'm like, what do you do there? He goes, you squat. I go, I'll get it all over my shoes. And they're like, no, you won't. You squat. And I was like, let me use your shoes. And the guy's like, you're not using my shoes. I'm like, take me to a real hotel. And they're like, you're going to be fine here. I said, I'm not going to be fine here. There's no toilet. It's right there. And I'm like, that's not a toilet. And so, I mean, that was like a big issue. There's no real toilet. I'm telling these guys to take me somewhere else. And They're like, you're going to be fine. Here, you know, here's some spending money. It's like 200 American dollars. They gave me 1,000 rupees. I would later find out after the first breakfast that it was only $17 they gave me.
Wow.
I was like, these mother... I don't know if I can drop the F.
Yeah, you can curse. That's fucked up, man.
I was like, these motherfuckers, right? So I got 1,000 rupees, and I go find out. You know, I'm like, and they're telling me 200 American dollars. I go to have breakfast down in the hotel restaurant, and... They charged me 360 rupees. I was like, oh my god, there's over a third of my
that's your expense money
out here. I was like, these pieces of shit. So I'm getting lied to left and right, you know. I'm getting lied to left and right.
At this point, did you start having a bad feeling or no? Because it might be a bad trip. You're not thinking anything sinister at this point, are you?
I wasn't thinking anything sinister. I was just thinking it's just fucked up how unorganized this shit is. That's, you know.
All right, so now what the show does, they go, right, you go to the airport, and again, okay, you have leather goods. It's not the same amount, but all right, you got leather goods, you go in the airport, same as always. This airport,
Before I get to the airport, I mean, that's the show. There's so much more that happens in Pakistan before I even get to the airport.
Listen, tell me back. I'll be honest, I'm so compelled by your story, so tell me what else happened.
All right, being the dick that I am, on the way over, I had to take so many planes to get there. I think I went to Toronto, then London, then U of A, and then Pakistan. So it was a long flight to get there. But on the flight from U of A, there was a cute girl on the plane. Her name was Sadet Sadik, and the reason I remember her last name Sadik was because I was like, oh, it's like you're sawing someone's dick off, and then she was laughing because she was like. She was laughing. She was like, "I've never heard it like that before. Oh my god!" And I was like, "How have you never heard it like that before?" But she had a Western. I mean, her family was all from Pakistan, but she was like studying in the West, and she had great, you know, great English accent and everything. So I'm making out with this chick on the plane from U of A under the blanket the whole time I'm there, and I mean, we're getting frisky as hell on this plane, and I'm thinking, "Hey, Pakistan's not gonna be bad at all if the girl looks like this." And as we're landing, she goes, don't take this the wrong way, but when we're at the airport, don't even talk to me. You can't give me a hug. I'm like, why not? You know, she's like, it's just the way it is here. She went back to the restroom and got changed and put on a chemise and all that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking, hey, the girls here aren't that bad. So
all right, they get down. That's all that matters.
No, well, yeah, they do get down. But, so she comes out wearing like the whole, you know, the burqa and the goalie attending mask and all that kind of stuff, and I'm like, wow. So she gives me her email address, and she's checking in. She gives me her email address. And she's like, email me, we'll get together, and you know, I'm thinking, all right, this is not gonna be a bad trip after all. So when these guys are like staying in your hotel, I'm like, fuck that, I'm going out. I'm gonna go hook up with this chick. I gotta find an internet cafe. So I'm jogging through the streets. Streets of Islamabad near, you know, it wasn't Islamabad actually. I landed in Islamabad, but I was staying in a place called Murray, which is, you know, it's just crazy chaos, but it's like organized chaos. I mean, there's all these shops with no walls on them and just thousands and thousands of people. And I'm jogging through the streets of Murray looking for an internet cafe, and I see a couple of cute little Pakistani girls, and I'm like, hey, what's up? But I don't stop there. I get their attention, and then I'm crossing this long bridge to cross over the busy road, and I look back, and the girls are waving at me, so I'm like, oh, they like me, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I go and I find the internet cafe, and I email this chick, and along with a lot of my other friends. I mean, I'm sending out the whole, hey, I'm in good, wonderful Pakistan, life is great here, you know, my sarcastic emails, and then I email this chick. I'm like, here's the hotel I'm at, here's the room number I'm at, and all kind of stuff. Looking forward to hanging out with you later. Well, as I'm jogging back over the bridge, these girls are still there. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to go just flirt just the hell of it.
I love you. We're on the same creep level. I love it. This is awesome. Okay.
No, well, the funny thing is, like, I've read a lot of the hate mail. People are like, you know what? You should be beheaded for that. You're disrespectful. And I'm like, I will flirt on my deathbed. I don't give a shit.
Of course. You have to. Okay.
That's just how I am. I have no fear when it comes to making a pretty girl giggle. That's it. It's easy for me. So I see these girls. They don't speak a word of English, and with their like they sit there with their embarrassed looks at looking at each other. They're obviously not like understand what I'm saying, but they were enjoying my flirting with them. And in the show, it's an older man that comes out, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
In real life, it was a younger like little brother, and the guy looked like he was maybe 100 pounds wet. You know? No joke. I mean, he was just skin and bone, but he's like, but it's just the longest little ZZ Top beard going on, and he's like pushing me. I'm like, dude, seriously, man, knock it off. And I was walking away when this shit was happening. I was walking away, and this guy shoves me in my back, so I grabbed him by his wrist and just easily bent his shit up. But okay. When I did that, my bag dropped, and I was just holding this guy's wrist up, and he was screaming and whatnot. But I was letting him know, and I don't really like that. I gave him like a few playful extra little like wrist bends, just to let him know not to fuck with me. When I go to grab my bag, it's gone. And the only one that was standing there was this little old woman not making eye contact with me. I was like, this little bitch stole my shit. And I'm like, I can't do shit about it, though. This is not cool. So what can I do? A little old lady jacked me in Pakistan. So now here's where some of the discussion boards come up. They're like, what was in that bag? See, he did have drugs. I'm like, God, you guys keep jumping to the wrong conclusion. You know what was in that bag that pissed me off so much? Bottom line, it was my bag, first of all. Second of all, it had my American Pie soundtrack in there, and that shit was cool at the time. That's what I was talking to.
You know, it's funny you said that, because everybody has a conspiracy theory. When I was talking about it with my friends, I'm like, oh, you know, Eric's going to be on the show. It's like, oh, I bet you $100 the reason he carried his bag through the streets is... And so people would try to assume that there was drugs in your shit already. So it's just, they're all haters. So I want to go right to the airport, because this part is just crazy. So you get to the airport finally. What happens there?
Well, a whole week goes by. I get sick that night. And it turns out, I went to hang out. Instead of hanging out with a girl, that's a whole other story, but forget it.
I want to ask, did you hang out with the girl?
She calls the hotel and she tells, she goes, I had no idea you were staying there. You're staying in a bad spot. And she actually confirmed. She says, don't go out in public because they don't like Americans there. But she tells the hotel clerk how to tell a cab driver how to get me out to her house. And I take like an hour and a half trip with this cab rider to get to the middle of nowhere to hang out with her. I think I'm hanging out with her, but she comes out to the cab to get me and she goes, I messed up. I told my brothers that you were coming and that you were an actor and they want to hang out with you instead. I'm like, I don't want to hang out with your brothers. I came here to hang out with you. And next thing I know, I'm hanging out with these four dudes who are, you know, in their teens and early 20s, all with beards, by the way. as much beards as they can possibly grow. And they're driving me around, blasting everything on their made-up CD playlist. They went from Garth Brooks to AC/DC to Run DMC to the hardest metal to the softest country. And these guys are like, we're straight up gangsters, yo. And
no,
I'm like,
from where
I come from, be blasting Garth Brooks out of your car like that, you gotta be. You know?
Wait, so now you think you can get it in with this hot chick and you're hanging out with her little brother and all these dudes driving around?
This is not the one I wanted. This is my first night in Pakistan, and it just sucked. We went and whatever. They were trying to show me a good time, but their idea of a good time was they went and did like what I thought was a drug deal, but it wasn't. It was an alcohol deal. They went and bought some alcohol, and that's because I didn't know. And this is where I learned at the time that alcohol is really bad in Muslim countries, especially Pakistan. Uh-huh. Now, I don't drink and I don't do drugs, so I still hang out with people who. Who do all this stuff. Because, bottom line, everyone does it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, they take me to a park, and they're just talking about girls they wish they could bang and stuff like that. And that's the night I get in Pakistan. I'm like, all right, great. They're like, finally they drive me back to my hotel, and from water that I drank that day, I guess it just hit me hard. I got sick. I stayed sick until Thursday. And finally Thursday, I'm like, screw it. Thursday's Valentine's Day, by the way. I go back. I'm like, I gotta get out of this hotel room. I've been in here too long, and I gotta get some food. I go back to my internet cafe, and I got an email from this girl that I've just honestly been in love with since I was five, and she's telling me that her mom died from cancer, and that she sent out a group email. She was saying that, thank you for your prayers and all that kind of stuff, and before you guys jump to the conclusion, oh, her mom died, trust me, I hated that woman. That woman hated me, and I hated her, so I was, like, all happy about this. I was like, all right. I was like, it's Christmas in February. This is great, And then I emailed that girl. I'm like, sweetie, I'm sorry for your loss. I can't wait to be home. I'll be home in a week because I was going to go to Sweden first before I came back. And I was like, I'm going to be home in a week when I'm When I'm there, I'm going to comfort you. I'm going to help you get through this. And then I'm like, all right, Vernon Harold, you know. But I, so this is the day before. This is Valentine's Day that this happened. So I'm like, can't wait to get home. Because now this girl that I've always wanted to be with, who I couldn't be with because her damn mother hated me so much, was out of the way. So I'm like, all right.
You removed the hurdles. So now you're money. You're good.
Correct. I'm like, I can't wait to get home now because now the mean old fat bitch is not going to be able to talk block me anymore. So that Friday morning, I'm counting the minutes to go home. I got tired of watching the hotel's old HBOs, and their HBO had commercials, by the way. What the fuck? How's the HBO got commercials? I was watching, I think, Citizen Kane with the John Lithgow guy from Third Rock from the Sun.
With commercials.
And for them, that's a great movie. And it's like, this movie was made in 1988 or something like that. Anyway, and I get a call, and it's Ray's contact. I think, if I remember correctly, the guy's name was Joe or something, and he's like, hey, come on down to the lobby. And I'm like, well, you gotta bring this stuff up to the room first. And he's like, why? And I was like, so I can make sure that everything's there and call Ray and make sure that, you know, you guys aren't jacking him. He's like, we're not jacking him. And I was like, just bring this shit up. So he brings up only one suitcase. And normally when I would go to Turkey, I would have two super heavy, huge, big suitcases, and I would usually have to pay extra because it weighs so much. So he brings up one suitcase, and I'm like, why is there only one suitcase? So I call Ray, and I'm like, dude, they only got one suitcase, and there were like a total of nine jackets, pants, and skirts. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. He goes, I'm getting a really good deal. It's just the first of many trips, so I just want to make sure that everything runs smoothly. He goes, is everything in good condition? I go, yeah, everything's nice. And he goes, there's supposed to be nine. Nothing's missing. I was like, no. He's like, there's no rips. There's no tears. I'm like, nothing. He's like, all right.
Beautiful.
He goes, that's fine. I'll see you when you get back. So I'm like, all right, cool. At least I'm not going to have to pay. I'm not going to have to pay extra for the weight. And so I get to the airport, and this guy's like, hey, next time you come back, we're going to do it right. We're going to take you out. We're going to show you around. I'm like, yeah, sure. Next time I'm coming back. And I knew right then and there, I'm never fucking coming back.
You're never going back to this country.
I was going to be like, fuck Pakistan, Ray. That trip is whack. I'm never going back. I'll only go back to Turkey. Fuck that.
All right.
Get to the airport. It's really early in the morning, and there's this huge long line. And I'm honestly like a good 7 inches average taller than everyone there because they're little people over there.
Yeah.
And I'm 6'1", and I'm walking around the corner. I'm 6'1", 225, just solid muscle. At the time I maxed out at 420. I was benching over, you know, I could rip 405 a couple times. And
yeah, you're in tremendous shape, and they're not working out over there in Pakistan. So you're a monster.
No, they're
over
not. I was probably, you know, I was definitely two times stronger than anyone there, and probably three times than a lot of people. And that's all I did. I would go to the gym and I would just work out, and because I like to talk, you know, I love to work out. That was my addiction, and I love being able to talk shit and back it up. I was a young, stupid, cocky guy, and I was a football player. I still have all the defensive records at my high school. And like I said, I wanted to play NFL football. I just was not damn near good enough. But
okay.
I get to this airport. I'm the biggest guy in line. They call me to the front of this long line. I'm like, oh hell yeah. So I come walking to the front of the line, no problem. And the guy speaks a little English. He goes, business or pleasure? And I'm like, pleasure is my business. You know?
That was the greatest line on the show. When you said that, dude, that was fucking great.
But that just goes to show because I'm an idiot. And I love to just, like when I order stuff at like Fuddruckers or somewhere else where they call your name over the intercom, I'll be like Skywalker, Luke, you know, shit like that. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, my parents are Star Wars fans. They did that to me.
Yeah, hey. you're fucking around, having a good time.
So I've got one guy going through all my stuff and everything. And he waves me on through. I pack everything up and I'm walking, and a dude comes and grabs me, a little guy, little short guy with a Burt Reynolds mustache. And he goes, are you carrying narcotics? And I said, without a doubt, without any hesitation, I go, check it again.
Okay.
And he explains in Urdu to whomever to take my stuff to a different room, and they hold me in another room. I was like in the episode of Locked Up Abroad, they had me in the same room. I was not in the same room at all. I got brought to one room, and then they brought the suitcase, not just the suitcase, not my backpack and not my luggage, but they brought the suitcase to the other room. Well, I'm waiting like I don't know how long, 20 plus minutes. And all I'm thinking is I don't want to miss my flight. I don't care if they destroy the luggage. Just give me all the leather samples back and everything. Just give me another suitcase or luggage to carry all the leather samples in. Well, finally, the guy who grabbed my arm comes back, and there's a guard behind him holding these two very thinly, but they're plastic sealed, and what would end up being opium. He says, "What is this?" I said, "Why are you showing me this?" He says, "This is opium." And the way he says opium, he says opium. I said, "Why are you showing me this?" And he goes, "This came out of your luggage," and I knew right then and there that I'd just been set up. I was so fucking pissed. I wasn't like, no, that's not, I knew right then and there. I didn't think like they were trying to set me up or anything. I was like, it was, everything that I've been told was just too good to be true. This is the way this guy went out of his way to assure me that this, God damn it. So I'm feeling like a damn idiot, and I'm absolutely scared about what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to ask you. Eric, I want to ask you, the second he says this is opium, you said you knew, what goes through your head, because that's what, I really want to know, what goes through your head at that point, this is opium, you're fucked, what are you thinking right there at that second?
I'm thinking, Ray, you mother...
Yeah, all right.
That's exactly, I'm thinking, God, I just want to get my hands around you, that's it. If I had, I would have ripped that man from piece to piece if I had my hands around him right then and there. So... I said something that you never want to say when you're on vacation. I said, I need to speak to the American Embassy. And I learned that from the damn movie Broke Down Palace with
Sardine
and Kate Beckinsworth. So this guy, when I said that, he comes and he said it's just as a matter of fact. He goes, Embassy can't help you. We're hanging you after 5 o'clock prayer. And I'm like, holy shit. And I'm definitely panic mode there. And the guards are starting to fill up the hallway. And they told me they're going to hang me, and now they're trying to put cuffs on me. And they're not even cuffs. They're like old medieval shackles. So I was like, fuck this. And I went barreling through the whole – everyone. I just went barreling through. It was kickoff. And
you know what? Let me cut you off there because that scene's awesome. I was actually going to ask you – that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Did the guard really say, well, the embassy's not going to help you. We're going to hang you after prayer. So you think this guy's legit – and did you really, because that scene is priceless in the episode. You take off, you knock down all these little dudes, and you're just running with no direction.
When we were filming that scene, and they're like, just do what you did. And I just fell through the door, and the whole door actually ripped off its hinges in the scene. And that wasn't set up for that. I ripped the whole door off its hinges for the scene. But when I barreled through it, when I was out in the hallway, I barreled through these guys. I'm out in the hallway, and I didn't see who was shooting me. All I heard was, bah, 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 bah. I was shitting my pants. And the thing about it was there was people all around me. So this guy was shooting up the hallway with other people in it. And so everybody hit the ground. Everybody. And I was one of them. I hit the ground, and then I barreled through a door into like a waiting room, and there was a smaller office on the other side of this waiting room. Then I went to that waiting room. There's no windows, and I'm barricading the shit out of the desk. I'm putting desk in. I'm putting all this other stuff up on the desk. Finally, these guys couldn't get into the room, and I got nowhere to go. I get on a phone, and it wasn't a rotary phone like it was on the episode. It was a push button phone or whatnot. And I'm trying to call my manager. My manager always said, if you're in trouble, you call me first. So I'm freaking out. I'm scared. I'm trying to call my manager. And my whole goal was, if I'm going to be hung, I want to at least warn the others that are making these trips. I mean, I wouldn't tell my manager. Everyone knew what I was doing. My mother, my manager, my brothers, my agent, a lot of friends. Everyone knew what I was doing. And so I wanted to just warn them so they can warn all the other guys at the gym. Screw it. If I'm going to die, at least make my life worth something. If I die, then no one's going to know, and this guy's going to continue doing it. And I'm thinking, just warn others. These guys are trying to get into the room. They can't. Finally, I'm like, I'm not coming out. They're like, they're like, come out with your hands up. You're so grounded. And I'm like, you can't get in here. Finally, I hear, hey, after like 40 minutes, maybe.
Oh, my God.
I'm
glad you just said that, because I was going to ask how long you sit in that room just sweating, going crazy. Oh, so you're in there for 40 minutes. All right.
Finally, I hear Eric Aud. And I'm like, and he goes, want to speak to an American? And I was like, you from the embassy? First off, I'm like, how the hell do you have my? I was like, how the hell do you know my name? And the guy's like, your passport? And I was like, and then I said, are you from the embassy? He goes, DEA. And I'm like, how do I know you're not lying to me? I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm 21.
Of course you are. Of course.
And I said, how do I know you're not lying to me? He's like, ask me a question. I said, what state are you from? He goes, Texas. And I'm like, everyone knows Texas. Who's your favorite football team? And this is back in 2002. So he says, Cowboys. And I'm like, Dallas, they suck. You know? So,
such a wideness. I love it.
I don't think like anyone else. I never have, and I just make fun of myself. Trust me, the things that come out of my mouth the wrong time. If I was like, I would be the guy in the middle of a war while we're getting overrun, still busting jokes. That would be me. Anyway, dude, you want to come out and talk to us? I'm like, I'm not coming out there. They said they're going to hang me. So then all of a sudden there's like this chatting going on outside the door and everything, and he comes back and he kind of had like a chuckle in his voice because they were kidding.
Right.
I was like, how the fuck do you kid about that? Well, he's like, do you want to come out and talk? So I finally come out and talk, and this guy shows me his badge, and, you know, he's letting me know he's DEA, and that there was two other DEA agents with him, actually. There was a total of three. And they're like, they go, you don't have to talk to us. I'm like, yes, no, I want to talk to you. He's like, all right, if you want to talk to us, that's fine, but we're not going to tolerate it. If we think you're lying, we're leaving. I'm like, I'll tell you guys everything. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So I get led across the airport by just a swarm of Pakistani policemen, and they take me to this other office. And here I'm talking to these guys. They try to offer me a cigarette. I tell them I don't smoke. One guy, and they're trying to play like the nice cop, bad cop
thing.
Yeah,
good
like
cop, bad cop
thing
for us.
They're bombarding me with questions, all three of them, like, and trying to get me right in the middle of, I'll be halfway through an answer, and someone else will answer a question. I'm like, do you want to hear the fucking answer or not? And this guy's like, you know, don't be snappy with us, you know, I'm like, I'm fucking pissed. I said, I don't belong here. I tell him the whole story.
You know, Eric, the best part is they probably heard that story a gazillion times, and yet you're the one, literally, you're the needle in the haystack, you're the one true one, and they're not going to believe anything you say.
That's exactly what I was saying to them, and I was telling them, but here's this is Ray's number. You can call my mother. We can call this guy. There's other people making these trips, and then one guy's like, why would you come to Pakistan? I go, I didn't come for Pakistan. I came for Sweden. He's like, why would you go to Sweden? I go, every time I go to Sweden, I hook up, and then some dude's like, oh yeah, what's their names, huh? What's their names? I'm like, they're not your type, you know. And then this guy over here is like, you want some cigarettes? You don't want to smoke? And I was like, I don't smoke. He goes, I don't do drugs. And the guy goes, you don't do drugs? You don't smoke pot? Come on, everyone smokes pot. And I'm like, no, that's just you.
Oh my God. See, wait, watching this, I'm just going through like, you're the one person telling the truth, and they don't give a shit.
It's the worst feeling on earth because I'm thinking these guys are gonna. I'm stupidly thinking these guys are gonna help me, but then what it was that made me finally realized these guys are full of shit was the one guy goes, if they don't give you death here, they're going to give you 20 years. And then when you're done getting 20 years here, you're going to get at least 5 to 10 years back in the States. And I was like, wow, man. They made a movie called Double Jeopardy with Ashley Judd. Now I know you're full of shit.
You can't sentence me twice.
I knew then and there these guys were not going to help me, and I told you guys everything. I go, okay, I know I'm fucked. But other people are making these trips. You got to at least warn them. And the guy comes over and puts his hand on my chest, and he goes, God, your heart's beating so fast, Eric. Why are you so scared? He goes, you're not acting now. And he goes, you're lying to us. I go, why do you think I'm scared? I told I'm going to get hung. I don't know what's going to happen. You guys are fucking with me. Of course I'm scared. Finally, the guy goes, we're going to go check out on all your information, but you think you're a tough guy now, this country's going to show you just how weak you are. And he goes to the door and says, he's all yours. Guards come in, grab me.
Yeah, and the next scene they show is crazy. They put you in the holding cell, and right away, is that accurate? Right away you get into a fight the second you get into the holding cell?
They had to move me to another holding cell, because the first holding cell they put me in was just completely, they put me in a holding cell at this police station near the airport, and then they transferred me to another one to where I'd be by myself. I got there, and the room was just full of little old men. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's not that hard to be a badass when everyone's wearing a dress and sandals, okay? I'm wearing boots, I'm standing 6'1", everyone's 5'6", you know, 5'7", and they're tiny old men, and they still got sand on them, I tell you that. Those guys got balls on them. But they're
the scene when they show when the girl from the embassy, who was hot in the episode, she shows up and she said that they negotiated 3 days of torture.
I ended up seeing her at another. I got moved to another police station because it was just in a brawl from the very get go, and I had to like stay in the corner. Dickheads were throwing water at me and everything, and I was clocking full.
Okay.
And finally, the guards are like, all right, let's get him out of here. They gave me some tea and then brought me over to this other police station, and that's where I see the embassy girl. And she comes up and she goes, hey, she goes, how are you doing? I was like, great, never better. And she's like, really? I was like, no.
That was great in the episode. That was, listen, I'm really sarcastic. When you said that, and she, really? I'm like, this fucking bitch. That was classic. But now she said they negotiated 3 days of torture for you.
Not then and there. This is the episode so fucking rushed. It's ridiculous. I stayed that night in jail. There, like she says to me, she goes, is there anyone you want us to contact? And I was like, yes, contact my mom, contact this. And she was actually shocked that I was willing to have people know where I was at. Because I guess I end up finding out later that they're used to when people get arrested in other countries, they don't want anyone to know they got arrested.
Of course not.
They're ashamed and they're embarrassed. I'm like, yes, call my fucking mom right now. So she's like, well, I was like, when am I going to see you guys again? And this is like when I first started getting the realization that, wow, I'm going to be here sometime. She says, well, we'll try to come back on Tuesday to see how you're doing. And I was like, oh, my God. Well, she ended up calling my mom and coming back. And whatever my mom said, she comes back in an hour. She goes, your mom told the exact same story you did. She's trying to get lawyers for you right now. And that let me know at least I wasn't alone and Will's returning at least. So that felt good. But then she explained to me what was going to happen. She goes, I'm going to be presented for the magistrate tomorrow, and the magistrate's going to decide how many days to give you for physical remand. I was like, what's physical remand? And she says, it's what they do in Pakistan. They figure if they can't get the truth out of you, they can beat it out of you. So I'm like, I'm going to get tortured. She's like, yep. And I was like, awesome. Right?
What?
I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I'm laughing about this at the time. I'm like, this is fucking believable. I couldn't believe
Eric, let me set the scene. So now you're doing the transactions. Now you're arrested in Pakistan. They have you in a few holding cells. They get in touch with your mom, which has to be a great feeling now that you know now that your mom knows you're alive, you're okay, but you're arrested. Now they just negotiated 3 days of torture for you to get the truth out, which you've been telling them. Now
they negotiated that the next day. And the girl from the embassy, what their job is they're supposed to observe. They're not supposed to get involved. So she actually put her neck on the line by doing this.
Okay, that's solid. Okay.
Because when I was presented in front of the magistrate, the people wanted 10 days, and this chick steps up and talks to the magistrate in Urdu and comes back. I'm like, what happened? She goes, they wanted 10 days. I got you 3. And I was like, I could have lasted 10. And she's like, you're welcome. And I was like, thanks.
Now, you got to do me a favor. You got to describe the torture that they did to try to get these 3 days. Because in the show, you got to describe the torture that happened.
Torture sucks. It's like just getting beat by your parents for the entire weekend. It's just horrible.
Now, the feet thing, that actually, it gives you the chills when you see the feet. Now, what they do? They held your feet up and they just kept hitting your feet over and over?
I was on a chair that got put on its back, and my hands were chained, so I couldn't do anything. And They would ask me questions and smack my feet a couple times and ask me. There was one dude asking me questions, and there was two guys that would like kind of take me from station to station before and hold me in place or prepare me. And they would administer the torture. The guy who spoke English, who didn't even speak to me, he spoke English, but he didn't really understand it.
Okay.
He would just keep asking the same questions. He wanted to know where I got the drugs, where their addresses were, what their numbers were. And
in
he
Pakistan,
just wanted me to make...
You wanted that Pakistani information.
In Pakistan, because I was giving up. I was telling the whole story and everything, and he wasn't understanding what I was saying, but the more I talked, at least it would prevent them from beating on me. And they started with my feet, and, God, the feet just sucked. They love feet. I mean, they cane the bottom of your feet.
Now, this might be a stupid question. Did your feet still hurt? It might be a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question. My feet suck. My feet, when I'm on my feet for a long time, when I came back, the only job I could get when I came back was security in Hollywood. I was a bouncer, and working 4-hour nights is just crazy pain. I have to wear cushions in my boots so that it's tolerable. But they swell up. I went and got MRI'd. I got 14 bone chips in the bottom of my right foot and a couple in my left foot. And they're like splinters off a broom handle. There's nothing that can really be done. I'm sure they could be done, but it's just money I don't have to blow. And
now let me ask you a question, because in the show they kept showing you dunking your head in the water. They were doing all that to you also, like dunking your head in water.
Yeah, no, they dunked, they, oh. they 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 do my feet. They ask me the questions. They drown me. Then they ask me questions. Then they hang me up like a punching bag, ask me questions, and then they electrocute me. They didn't show that in the show, but they were electrocuting me, and they just turn it up. And it was like doohickey onto like a battery. It's horrible.
Now this goes on for 3 days, and now they put you in the real jail now.
Well, before they put me in the real jail, on the third day, they just wanted me to admit the drugs are mine. That was it. They just wanted me. These are your drugs. Just say they're yours. It all stops. And I never admitted anything. I never admitted anything.
And you said you had a great quote. You said all you had was your pride at that point. Your innocence. That's all you can prove. Like, they're torturing you, but you're not going to say that they're yours. You're not going to lie. You had your pride, and you didn't do this shit.
I'm also thinking, like, Jesus Christ, I mean, anyone who can go through this kind of pain and still hold on to the truth, I mean, to the truth, they gotta believe them.
That was my selling point. I'm like, if this guy was guilty, when they started breaking his feet, okay, listen, it's mine, let's deal with it from there to stop the torture. All right, now you go to the real prison.
Well, not immediately. I went back to the jail holding cell. So I got a nice rest, you know, and you know, they gave me biscuits and tea and everything. I didn't just go from being tortured to prison. No, I got a nice rest back in the cell. Then the next day, they take me on this hour ride to this huge jail. It's called Central Jail Adiala. It was built in 1986. It was only meant to house 1,800 prisoners, but there's over 6,000 prisoners in this prison. Hundreds are coming and going every day. It's got the Pan Am hijackers from the 86 hijacking in Karachi, where 23 people were killed on that flight for America. It's got the future. It had the future and current prime minister of the country, Yusuf Raza Jilani. It had Benazir Bhutto's husband. It had the leader of the Shias. I mean, this prison definitely was the mother of all prisons. And while we were at this prison, people are like, oh, it's prison. It's a good prison. No, it's so chaotic and crazy, and it's I get to the jail, and what they have there are number dogs. See, the show just shows you going through a big brawl of people. That's not accurate at all. There's two fights. There were two fights that day. The first fight was when they have these guys called number dogs. Number dogs do the guard dirty work for them. They get extra privileges, extra rations. If they, you know, they like keep the prisoners in line, because there's so many prisoners, you know, they need to police themselves.
Okay.
And so what these guys are doing, there was about 12 of them, and they're in a horseshoe shape around the small door in the much larger gate door. And these guys' job basically is to, like, take anything of value from you, slap you down, take jackets, shirts, pants, money, if you have it, your shoes, your boots. I mean, most people are in sandals, so they'll take anything of value out of anyone who comes through that gate, and then they decide where to put them. They put them in the – well, when I came in there, the guard puts his hands up, and he, like, let me know that, hey, you're – get ready, you're gonna fight right now. And I'm like, nah.
God.
But no, I'm pissed. I'm fucking pissed. And I mean, I'm like, open the damn gate. Open the fucking gate.
You know, you have all this frustration and rage in you. You wanna go crazy and release some of your frustration right now.
I was looking forward to them opening that door. I was so looking forward to them opening the door. I came in swinging, I tackle a guy, these guys are like shit, and they were like, they spread out quick.
This guy's ready to fight.
These guys are like, it was funny because a couple of the guys were running, but it was really only three or four of them that were really trying to go at me, but they were not prepared. They were nowhere near strong, and my size and strength was just awesome. And football, just being pissed and fucking adrenaline out. I honestly felt like I could lift cars at that moment, and I. It took the littlest Mishakti, this guy who was like 5 foot, to come walking out of, like, after these guys are on the floor and like getting away from me. I'm ready for more to come. Who comes like to grab my wrist? And I'm thinking, what's this little guy going to do? This little Mishakti, like, he had enough of it and was trying to like get me to go to where I needed to go, which is processing barracks. So I follow this little guy to where I have to go, which is a super far part of the prison. And the number guards didn't even come. I followed this little guy amongst these long paths. Past these farms and all these other buildings, which are like there's a nursery, there's a kitchen, there's a mosque, and that's where everyone is in the mosque, because there's like prayer. It's like prayer time is about to happen. Okay. Everyone's getting ready for mosque. I'm still tired as shit, you know. I just want to. I'm tired, so they put me in a processing barrack, which is a long fucking barrack where everyone basically sleeps shoulder to shoulder to shoulder, and I'm by myself though, because everyone's out praying. And I go to and I just lay down. I'm just resting. I'm resting. And finally, I feel people gathering in the room and hearing them. And you know, you can sense when someone's like in your private bubble. And I open my eyes, and people are just really close looking at me, and they're like right there looking at me, like really close. And they're just the most inconsiderate motherfuckers ever. And I'm like, get away from me, dude. Seriously, get the fuck away from me. One guy comes in, and people are starting to gather because I'm definitely like the main attraction all of a sudden.
Of course
and
you are. You're an American there.
And we're on the second floor, and these one guy goes, what country are you from? And I'm like, Pakistan, born and raised, you know?
I love the idea. The only thing you had now is your innocence and your sense of humor, so thank you. Okay.
So this guy goes, no, this is you. And he showed me an Urdu newspaper. Front page is me posing for fucking photos, you know,
wow.
At the airport. They took a bunch of photos of me with the drugs in front of me. And I
sure.
had, like, my arms around the guards. And I was like, because that's me. I'm a dipshit. But I was like, fuck it. I'm going to get out of here in a couple of days. I'm just going to have
a
story.
You got a bad rap. You were 21 years old. At 21, every one of us were punks. You're 21, 22. You're working out. Good-looking guy. You're in Hollywood. So you got the swag about you, and now that's the way you're going to be. You're 21. If you went now, it would be a little different, probably.
No, I would never go now. I definitely would never go now. And I've matured quite a bit, but I'm still the same dickhead in some sense. I just I think I picked my spots a little better.
Now, because I want to ask you.
I never thought I was going to be there that long because I thought they're going to catch the real drug smuggler. Everyone knows what I was doing. They're going to get me out of here. The embassy's going to step up and be like, you know, this guy's innocent, and I never thought I was going to be there at all that long, so I was like, fuck it, live it up.
Now, I'm glad you brought up the embassy, because now, in the show, they had the DEA agents come in, they put out the six-pack, and they're like, do you know this guy? You're like, that's Ray. They said, all right, we arrested Ray. Now you're thinking, okay, you're probably walking out of jail right now. They got the bad guy. You're good.
Well, that wasn't for 6 months after.
Oh, wow. So you're... No, wait, let's do it. The show didn't show this.
That story only tells a year and 2 months of my whole 3-year stay there.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to ask them, because they, before you said you've been there, the show didn't show, like, what was your everyday routine in the jail? Like, obviously, it wasn't just those fights. What did you do every day? Because I know it's just the same shit.
They took me on death row at first to protect, to keep me from, because after that first day, I mean, when I threw a guy off a balcony, I wasn't trying to kill the guy. There was a whole bunch of people down below, but the show makes me look like a fucking superhuman, which is not... Remember that. That was two fights being portrayed here, okay? I kicked ass from the number guard, that's for sure. But when I was in the barracks, I was outnumbered. I was getting my ass handed to me, and I had to make an example. So I threw a guy off the balcony.
Okay, and you killed him.
No, I didn't kill him. I mean, there was a crowd below, and there wasn't that high a balcony. There was a...
Okay. Because on the show, they said death row. So I'm like, holy shit.
I got sent to death row for my protection.
Okay, makes sense. All right.
Because death row is where you're as locked down as lockdown could be. The guards finally got involved and got me and took me not to death row right away. They took me to Kasori because, you know, I got in a fight. I really could have really injured somebody. So they took me to Kasori. I spent the first 5 days at Kasori in prison, but at least I was by myself. Kasori is a dark hole where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. It's so dark. And the only time you see light is when they bring you out to beat the bottom of your feet or to feed you. I would end up spending a total of 132 days in that hole over the course of my 3 years. The longest
Alone.
In a row was 8 weeks. Yeah.
Holy
longest
shit.
In a row was 8 weeks. So they take me to Kasori. They take me to death row, and they figure that's where I'll be safe. So at least I'm by myself.
Okay.
My routine would be, there was other prisoners there, and I met this guy who taught me how to play Texas Hold'em poker, and you know, they love to play, you know, we would play chess and Texas Hold'em poker, and I'm immediately learning, my routine would be to start learning the language as quick as possible. I was making myself flashcards. I was getting books from the embassy that I was requesting. You know, I got a Hindi book, and that was also an Urdu book, so I was learning Hindi and Urdu and learning how to read and write Urdu. I was not just sitting there feeling sorry for myself. I was getting my, I was doing everything I could to
You're
better
adapting
prepare
to your
myself
situation.
From
Yeah,
Absolutely.
You're adapting yourself. Okay, cool. So now,
go ahead.
I was saying you're adapting yourself, and in the show they show you, I guess you're in general population, and what, you started bribing the guards. Now, after the first few weeks, few months, are people more, I don't want to say accepting, are you not getting into fights anymore? Are they more like listening to part of us now?
I was still getting to the few minor altercations, like when I was going to and from court. The first time I went to court, they sent me with everyone else, and that was just a fucking mess. I mean, it was like tuna crammed in a big van, you know, standing room only, and not even standing room. People were sitting on each other's laps, getting driven an hour to the courts, and I was getting in fights in the holding cells, and they were like, well, we can't. So the embassy's like, we can't have this guy keep going to the courts and getting attacked. So they started sending me by myself. Too many people were giving me death threats, and it was just too many fights that they had to start sending me by myself with these Pakistani commandos. And these guys are just hilarious. Like, they wear the shirt to Pakistani Commandos, T-shirt that looks like it got printed up at your local swap meet. It's Pakistani Commando Elite. And this one guy spoke a little bit of English that I was driving with me one time, and he's, like, flexing his little muscle, and I was like, so how does one become an elite Pakistani commando? And he's like, well, they come around to the different police stations, and they look for young, in-shape guys, and they train us. And I'm like, okay, so what's your job? What do you do? And he looks me dead in the eye, and he goes, have you seen Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
And I
said, yeah. And he goes, that's us. And I was like, they give you idiot guns?
Shit, this guy's legit.
He's all, see you at the party, this is my weak arm, you know? That's what I was thinking.
All right, so listen, Eric, you're going through literally hell right now. You're in this horrible jail, you're going back and forth. The part where you've been in jail for, well, I guess 2 years, when they said you can pay $1,000 to the judge.
No, 11 and a half months. I talked back and forth to court like over 40 plus times. I'd already been told that I'd already had the DEA come. The DEA had come in. I was arrested in February. DEA had come in October and tells me, hey, we they want me to look at two sets of photos, and I picked Ray out of one of them. And apparently, he must have had someone another partner, because they were a little disappointed that I wasn't able to pick somebody else off another photo. I was like, Ray's the only one to know. Well, then I found out his room. That's when I found out his real name wasn't even Ray. They said, Ray's not his name. I go, what do you mean? They go, his real name's Raz McManassian. I was like, so hold on. This guy that I've known for years as my friend, as Ray Gazarian, he's been lying to me about his name, so he's been setting me up. He's been molding you.
Wow.
So this guy's willing to lie to me about his name. What else is he willing to lie to me about? So I'm like all happy now that the DEA is involved. And the DEA agent that had come in real life with a different DEA agent than the guy that was at the airport, than the three of us that were at the airport. And he genuinely felt bad. He was like, I don't know what to say. And it's October. I'm like, you're telling me that the whole time the embassy's been making fun of me and the DEA agents made fun of me. Now you're telling me you guys know I'm innocent, but you can't do anything for me. And he's like, it's not that we can't do anything for you. It's just that we can't get involved if it's narcotics related. And I'm like, but you're the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Oh, my. And you know it's not you. You got the guy they're looking for.
Exactly. I'm like, they got the guy. They just wanted me to confirm that it was the guy. So I don't know if they wanted to put more charges on him or whatnot, because he was back home ratting everyone out. He was like, look, man, my job
was
to hire Raznik. That's his real name. He was back home ratting everyone out. And he was like, my job was to hire idiots to travel the world. And by keeping them in the dark, we don't have to pay them a lot. Also, they don't draw suspicion to themselves because they don't know they're being used to do anything illegal. Now, the only good thing about this happening was he got caught because a Swedish girl lost her luggage at JFK Airport, but she continued on to LAX on her flight. Then they found in the walls of her suitcase just that professionally built. I mean, it's so intelligently concealed in the walls that you think it's just an empty suitcase. That's how smart and professional these guys are at doing this.
Yeah, anyway, this is a real deal.
They found drugs in her suitcase, and they set up a sting, and they arrested both her and the guy that I known for a couple of years as Ray Gazarian, except he posted bail under the name Raz McManassian. My mom had a private investigator looking for this guy, and he was the one who was able to put two and two together. He was like, hey, this sounds a lot like the guy that set up Eric. And sure enough, other people finally looked at the mugshots and like, that's the same guy that used to hire us. So they rearrested him and denied him bail. And the Swedish girl was released back to her country without being charged in less than 2 weeks because her story matched mine and several others. So at least by my being in jail, she wasn't. I got letters from I got a couple letters from this girl saying, thank you so much. If it wasn't for you, I'd be stuck in prison in America. And that made me feel good, at least. You know, at least you're helping, made me feel good.
Somebody out. All right, listen, Eric, we have like 15, 16 minutes left. I just want to go to the part now. I still have a lot more questions. You've been absolutely awesome. You've been in jail for, I said, 11 months. Your lawyer comes to get you and say if you pay $1,000 and admit you're guilty, you can leave basically soon, right?
Yeah, he said you'd probably be staying like another 4 months. I'm like, yes, let's do this. He's like, but you got to plead guilty. And I'm like, motherfucker.
You're right. All you had was your innocence.
I'm like, but I didn't do this. And in the show, it shows my lawyer is doing this, but it really wasn't the lawyer. It was a Pakistani interpreter the embassy interpreter who was the reason. His name was Afzal, and he goes, Eric. And it was like one of the consulars. It was a different consular than that girl then, because it was always new people coming. One girl goes, Eric, what do you care? It's Pakistan. And I was like, but I didn't do this. And then the little Pakistani interpreter says, Eric, what's worth more to you, your pride or your freedom? And I looked at him. And I was like, you little bastard.
That was a great scene in the show. That was a great scene in the show when you said not guilty. It's like, I was getting pumped up. I'm like, good. Like, I was glad you stuck by your guns the whole time. But else, I just want to fast forward now. So now you plead. Obviously, you say not guilty. And he sentences you to, was it 7 or 9 more years?
7 years.
All right, so he sentences you to 7 years. You go back to jail. Now, just, you got to go.
I'll tell you right now. When I got sentenced, I'm a tough guy, but I got sentenced. I didn't cry in the courtroom. I did not cry in the courtroom. I went upstairs to, like, this police hold, like, in a hold-up spot, which became my normal routine. The cops would take me upstairs because they started to kind of like me, and we would get lunch and stuff. And then all the news crews came up there, and it was when I was up there that I started to cry. I just lost my fucking life for something that I didn't do. So, yeah, I cried. You know, I just lost my life for something I didn't do. I was 22 years old. And no matter how tough you are, you still, you know. So I cried that day.
Now,
and they go, see, this guy cried like a little girl and all this kind of stuff. That's the Pakistani mentality. They compared me to a guy who got executed that same week in America for killing people. And they said when he was executed, he smiled and said, Allah Akbar. But when the American got sentenced to 7 years, he cried like a little girl. That's the Pakistani mentality. I did cry.
Yeah. They tried to make
you cry in the courtroom. Like, I cried when I thought I was on my own.
Yeah, and they tried to make you like a pussy. Now, do me a favor, because this part of the show, I think, was the most compelling, most interesting. Now, you accept the fact, listen, I'm in jail now 7 years, and monsoon season happens, and you're getting these crazy earaches.
I'm getting crazy earaches.
So tell me about the earaches, and then tell me right away, like, segment that right into Goldie, because I only have like maybe 12 minutes left. I just want everybody to hear this.
Well, I actually started getting my earaches that August, and my very first August in jail. So that, you know, and because the cells would fill up with water, and then cockroaches would come out, and it's just very, very horrible living conditions. And you're sleeping in water, basically. And I would get these super excruciating earaches that I couldn't even think. I couldn't eat. I couldn't read. And the situation that you're talking about, we had this guard in charge of our cell that week, because each week they get shuffled around the whole prison. His name was Goldie. Goldie was his nickname. There's a cigarette brand in Pakistan called Goldie Cigarettes. They're very expensive cigarettes compared to normal packs. These packs cost 40 rupees. A normal pack of cigarettes would cost 6-7 rupees. So this guy was famous for having prisoners beaten until they agreed to buy him Goldie Cigarettes. But he was more famous for having had hundreds of prisoners beaten to death since that prison had opened, who either refused to buy all these cigarettes or just couldn't afford to. Now, he comes over, he's watching me, I'm having a really bad spell with my ear, so I don't want to be fucked with. And all I can do is work out all the fucking time. I mean, I was doing like 200 plus push-ups in a row. And I'm just in so much fucking pain from my ears that I'm thinking to myself, Eric, if you kill yourself right now, it wouldn't be weakness. It would be humane, because I wasn't in that much pain. And this guy comes over and just starts talking shit. He's calling all Americans dogs, and I mean, he's speaking in all Urdu. And by this time, I've learned a lot of Urdu. This is like my first year and two months in jail. And he's speaking all this Urdu and saying how, and this is where we got the war drums for Iraq. We're about to go to war with Iraq. It was right before Iraq. And he's like, he finally says, give me 500 rupees. And I said to him in his own language, hey, we may all be dogs, but you're a little bitch. And then this guy goes, and he goes, give me 500 rupees. I'm like, go to hell. I'm not giving you any money. Go to hell. So he comes in the cell, and he thinks he's going to beat me. This is the littlest, fucking oldest little man. I mean, this is like your – imagine like a homeless person just panhandling who doesn't even use the money for food, right? And that's who this guy was. And he comes in thinking he's going to hit me with his stick, and I grab him by his wrist, and at first I just thought I was going to stop him, but then it just escalated from there, and I started punching him with his own hand, and then I just lost it. I'm like, fuck it. And I was beating this guy. Two other guards came in to help him, and I beat them, and one of them got away to go get help, and I was like, shit, I fucked up.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
You can fuck with you can fight the prisoners, you can actually fight the guards, but you don't fuck with goalies. This guy's shameless. He doesn't do the work himself. He has the number guards and the other guards do it, and he doesn't have them stop. He doesn't have them stop. He has them do it. I watched this man piss on a guy who was unconscious one time, and I was like, this guy's never going to do that to me. Well, when I did this, I knew I fucked up. I dragged him and the other guard out of my room, and I went in and I took the lock off the door, and I locked my own door and went back in because all the locks are different. And I suited up. I was like, as I was putting on all my clothes, I was putting tissue paper up in my gums or I was putting toilet paper up in my gums. I was like, God, if you can get me out of this right now, that'd be really cool. If not, just give me the strength to take as many of these motherfuckers out with me as you can. And I was so happy at that moment. I was so happy because my ears hurt so bad. I'm like, all right, these guys are going to do it for me. I thought I was going to die that day, but I was going to fucking make them earn it. That was for damn sure. And
okay,
so I remember.
They come and get you.
They come in there full force, man. This is where I wish they could put a little more production value into. I mean, if I could write a book and tell the story. That day, all my friends in the prison all agree on one thing. They said I held them out of my cell for over an hour. They threw tear gas in my room. I threw it back. I had a guard hostage at one point. I had them on. I barricaded the shit out of my door. They couldn't come in. Any idiot tried. They were scared to come into my cell. That was for damn sure.
And Eric, you truly thought you were going to die that day, correct?
I thought I was definitely going to die that day, and I was like, hopefully it's quick. I was like, honestly, I was hoping they knock me unconscious and then just do it from there.
Okay.
I never lost consciousness. I got fucked up so bad. They just pounded the hell out of me. My ribs were all jacked up. My shoulder was messed up. Then they held my hand out and broke each one of my fingers one by one. And the reason, like I broke a couple of their fingers, so they're definitely paying me back on that. And I remember thinking the whole time, my God, just let it end. Just let this end. And it just kept going on forever. I was just so tired. I couldn't breathe. I felt like my lungs were on fire.
And let my audience know how basically it saved.
I was on the floor, and I hear the superintendent demanding. He never leaves his office. This guy never comes into the prison unless it's an inspection day. And he's demanding to know what's going on. And the goalies over there telling him that they found drugs on me, that I attacked him. I'm like, he's lying. I didn't find any drugs on me. I said, he's lying. They're stealing money from me. I'm starving to death. I'm going to die. And he comes over. He said, you speak Urdu? I said, yes, sir. And he goes, what happened? And they stand me up, and he, like, lets the guards know that they can just sort of relax their hands around me. I'm standing there holding my right hand. My hand looks like an upside-down spider. And I'm telling him, I said, Goldie's coming over here storing money out of me. I said, I told him to go to hell. And he says to me, he goes, I know you don't belong here. I know you're innocent. He goes, as long as I'm here, you'll be left alone. He turned around and he fired Goldleaf right then and there. Then he asked me, he goes, who else here has given you problems? I pulled six more guards out of that crowd that day by their name tags because I'd learned to read and write. There was a guard who'd been fucking with me. He fired seven guards that day, but not just seven, one. Goldleaf was a monster for everyone in that prison. In the show, they're like, oh, now everyone loves me in that prison. It wasn't just because of Goldleaf. That was a huge turning point for me. That's for damn sure, because everyone left me alone. But people respected me in that jail because when I was there, I made my life a lot better by making the place better. I fixed up all the cells. They used to have, like, just pipes that were all rusted with shit everywhere. And I got, the plumbers to come in. It was very cheap out there. And I had money coming in from, back home with my family. And I was having it smuggled in through a religious teacher. I got the pipes all fixed. I liked working in the garden. I got, cool little magazines that these guys considered porn. People magazine to them is like porn. And I would give them out to people after all. I would give them out to people after I was done. Once I started learning the language, the guards were like, they saw me as a human being, and I saw them as human beings. They were, they had families and hopes and dreams for the kids, and I was like, you guys always try to beat on me to get money, but you're never going to get a penny out of me from beating on me. But if you want money, I want food. Go give me some food. I'll pay you. These guys, once it heard that, hey, the American speaks English, and he's hiring guards, every guard started coming to my cell throughout the week, and sometimes in the middle of the night, people are like, you need anything? I was like, yeah, go get me a VCD player. I want to watch movies. Go get me a DVD player. Go get me a cell phone. I mean, they would bring in anything, KFC chicken, Pizza Hut, ice cream, as long as you paid them. I mean, that's their whole fucking mentality, that they need that money, you know, because the corruption's so bad over there. If for a guard to work inside that prison, they got to spend 15,000 rupees to work inside that prison. That's roughly $250 at the time. But yet they're only getting paid 6,000 rupees a month from the government. That's 100 rupees. So they're starting 150 bucks in the hole just to work in that prison. Why? Because that's where the money is. That's where the corruption is. They're beating it out of you. They're extorting it out of you. Or they're working for you.
Wow. So now listen, now describe, because they didn't show this in the show, which actually bothered me a little bit. You get released December 26, 2004. How was your release thing? Did they come in and say, listen, you're released? Did you know you were getting released? How'd that happen?
Through a crazy thing, God, there's so much to the damn story. Through the crazy court systems and everything, was in the high court. Originally, my high court case had been rejected by withdrawn from a corrupt lawyer who wanted $25,000 to finish my case. And when I told him I was going to find other legal representation, he went and withdrew my appeal. Well, I was able to use the hijacker's attorney, the guys from the 86 hijacking, I was able to use their attorney to reopen my case in high court. And we went to court we went to the court on the 8th, the 8th or the 9th of December, and I presented myself in court and just completely shot down all the lower court cases. And they went out of their way to try to ensure a conviction. That suitcase that had the drugs in it, they took my cell phone out, my wallet out, my portable DVD player that I had that I was going to use for the airplane. They took that out and they put it all in that suitcase. So they figured, look, all this stuff is in the suitcase. It must be his. And I was like, why would I put my cell phone in that suitcase that's going underneath the plane? What if someone calls me? Granted, I didn't have that. I mean, I wouldn't have used it, but they didn't know that. I was like, why would I put an expensive DVD player in a suitcase that's going underneath the plane? The whole point of having a DVD player is to make a long air flight more enjoyable. Why would I put my wallet in there? What if it gets lost? How am I going to have ID? Bottom line, they went out of the way to put all my stuff that was on my body on that suitcase so that it would look like it's mine. That suitcase was not mine. And the judges believe me. They're like, we can't say that we had an American in jail for 3 years for a crime he didn't commit. I'm like, oh, my God. And they're like, and then they said, we'll come up with a decision later. Well, it was the 16th that they came up with their decision. Everyone in the prison knew that I was going to be getting my decision that day because I was always in the newspapers there, and the prison would get the newspapers. So here I'm getting called to the front of the prison by one of the guards, and he's like, today's your day. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, and he started praying for me. The guard was praying for me.
Wow.
I'm like, thanks. I appreciate that. As I'm walking up to the front, it's a long fucking walk to get to the front of the prison. All of a sudden, other prisoners and deputy superintendents were all praying for me to go home because I've done so much for this prison. I had a water well brought in. I got all the things fixed up. I made a garden. I was teaching people, you know, English and how to read and write their own language. I was, you know, I had dinner parties. I mean, I organized poker tournaments. I did so much. I had a good life in jail. The first year, 2 months sucked cock. But after that, when I learned how everything worked and people, you know, left me alone, if I had to spend the whole 7 years in jail, I could do it. And I knew that.
You would have survived. So now they release you. You get home, right?
The second they released me, I stepped out of the gates and got into the prison embassy and the prison embassy's vehicle. And it's funny because here we're driving, and I pull out my cell phone, and I call. I say, hey, Mom, I'm out. And the embassy's, like, looking at me. They're like, this guy's got a cell phone. The embassy was so pissed off at me. You know, they were like, what are you going to do? We're going to go to the compound. You're going to stay there. Your flight, because I actually got out on the 23rd, but I didn't leave Pakistan until the 25th, Christmas Day. So I got out on the 23rd, and then I had a huge dinner that night. And then they're like, you stay in your room, don't go anywhere, just watch TV and all that kind of stuff. And, well, I'm like, I'm a free man. I'm not staying in my room.
No fucking way.
First day out of jail, I'm in Pakistan. Guess what I do? Guess what this dipshit does? He goes for a jog on the streets of Islamabad, and I'm running. I'm waving to people. I'm speaking Urdu. I'm
jogging
on the streets of Islamabad. And I found myself a gym. I was like, I got to go see where I'm at. And even though everything's kilos out there, I put up 275 pounds, which is way the fuck worse than when I went in. I went in benching 420, and I came out benching 270. I was like, this fucking sucks. It felt great to run and jog, and embassy was just pissed off at me for, like, you left, and they put, like, a guard in charge of me until I literally was taken to the airport to leave.
All right, now, let me tell you, you did an amazing job reenacting your story. I just have a few personal questions I want to know. You did your own acting on the show, which doesn't really happen. Where was it all filmed?
We filmed that in Morocco. We filmed the interview in London, but the reenactment was in Morocco. They locked up abroad, wanted me to come on the show since season one, and I just didn't want to do the show. I thought it was cheesy. I thought the actors sucked. And honestly, I just wanted this story to go away. I was embarrassed about what happened to me. I didn't go around really sharing it with people. And, you know, the people that did know of it, I was always just lighthearted about it and made fun of myself. They had no idea what it was that I went through. But finally, season six is coming around. These guys, every season, kept, you know, contacting me and pestering me to be on the show. Finally, the girl's like, we know you're an actor. What if you played yourself? And I was like, if I played myself, I mean, I did it for two reasons. Because had I seen a damn show like this back in the day, I wouldn't have been dumb enough to go on a trip like this. Also, I knew that if I played myself, it would be done right. Because I mean, who better to play me than me?
Exactly.
And that's why I did the show. I mean, if it sucked, it's my fault.
Because a couple of personal questions. I know you mentioned the book deal. Any thoughts of a book deal? Because the story's crazy, and who wouldn't want to read every little detail about it?
I've been contacted so many times to do a book deal, and I want to. I would love to, but then the writers are like, you know, they want money up front, and I don't have that money up front, and no publishing company's been willing to give money up front that I've come across. So it just time just went by. I mean, I got back, and I became a bouncer for 4.5 years until poker started taking off, thank God. And now, you know, poker pays all my bills, and I own restaurants because of poker, and you know, I'm a very, very successful guy now, and it's honestly because of what I learned in prison. I learned to play poker in prison, and it's because of poker that I own restaurants and have a great, wonderful life now. So, in a weird
now,
way,
you have been,
that I went to jail.
Are you still acting more, and are you getting more acting deals because of being on the show now? Are you getting contacted a ton of times or no?
Well, the show's only aired last week. I've gotten a lot of opportunities. I have a meeting with 1821 Productions tomorrow. They did the movie Invention of Lying and The Box, and they're very interested in a couple of my scripts, obviously my story and the zombie action script that I wrote, a low-budget action film that I'm trying to get produced. But regardless, I've been acting up a storm. I mean, last year I did 20 jobs. This year I've done 6. I've got a couple movies lined up, and you know, I do all my own stunts, so actually I get a lot of work. I did one lead other than the Locked Up Abroad this year for a show called Shadows on the Mesa for the Hallmark Channel, and I did a lead last year in a movie called The Devil's Dozen, where with Eric Roberts and Jeremy London, Jake Busey, C. Thomas Howell, and I'm the main killer in the movie, and I'm just a badass in that movie. Regardless, I mean, all Locked Up Abroad, I've been acting for 20 years, and it takes me going and getting arrested and filming the show Locked Up Abroad to finally get some recognition and haters. So that kind of sucks, but whatever, I'll take it.
Because I want to end with two questions. One, because everyone, when I said you were going to be on the show, everyone asked me the same exact question, but I'll save that question for last. The actress that played your girlfriend beforehand, she's smoking hot. Who is she in anything else? The one who played your girlfriend who broke up with you in the beginning.
Oh yeah, she's my. Oh, guess what? She's my girlfriend now.
Wait, she's your girlfriend in real life?
She is now. Yeah, she. I met her on the set in January. I got so sick of dating LA chicks that I'm actually dating the girl who's on the other side of the planet now. That's how bad LA chicks are.
Wait, so that chick's your girlfriend?
Yeah, her name's Lamia, and absolutely in love with her. I was just in Morocco again last month visiting her. We stayed in the Sahara.
She
just happened to get the job because she spoke English and she knew the casting director, and she just, you know, she's not an aspiring actress or anything. She's a student, and she's just the most beautiful, wonderful girl I've ever met.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Now listen, every single person, I know you've probably been asked a zillion times, if you ever saw the guy Ray again, if you saw Ray, I need to know what you would do.
I did find Ray, actually. I found Ray a couple months ago.
Are you kidding? Wait, are you kidding me?
No, not at all. Of all places, I found his ass on Facebook. Because I got a civil suit against this asshole, so I've been looking for him for a long time. I was always under the impression that he was either in witness protection or had been deported, because this is just the nonsense that the DA ever that told us. You know, they're like, oh, he's gone, you can't get him. This motherfucker was living in Granada Hills, which is a 15-minute drive from me. So I'm looking for him on Facebook and everything, and there was a guy who had his name, but I was like, that's not him because of the pictures that were up. But finally, he posted a couple more pictures, and I'm like, that's that motherfucker.
Holy shit.
So I made a fake Facebook page and with a halfway decent girl and it was like, hey, let's go hang out and meet up at Coffee Bean or something. And he obviously fell for it. This guy shows up to this meeting what he thinks is going to be for the cute girl. And my whole thing was I'm just going to get his license plate number, and by adding him on Facebook under this fake account that I could get his phone number because you know they give you more information when you're friends with somebody.
Sure, of course.
Well, I show up and I just lost my shit. I saw this guy and I cracked. I was like, Ray, you didn't think I'd find you? And I cracked him in the parking lot. And then he took off running. And I tackled him. In the middle of the lanes. And this Asian lady was like, I'm calling the cops. And I was like, mind your own fucking business. And I'm pounding on this guy in the middle of this lot. The people are starting to like gather. And he's like, Eric, let's talk this out. And I'm like, you want to talk? Let's go talk. Sure. And I'm stopping mostly because people are around. Trust me, I would keep pounding on that guy if no one was around. So he's trying to give me the shit that he himself was innocent. He's like, Eric, I had no idea. The people I was working for set me up, too. And I was like, oh, they set you up, too? He's like, yeah, I had no idea. And I was like, that's why after I was arrested, 6 months after I was arrested, you got a Swedish girl arrested for doing the same thing. He's like, well, that's what I learned. So I cracked him again, and I was down pounding on this guy some more. And then he was like, just adamant. He's like, Eric, I swear to God on my daughter's life and all this stuff. He goes, I lost my life. I went to jail for 6 years. And people were gathering around. That's the only reason I stopped. I was like, so you swear you were innocent, right? He goes, yeah, I swear to God I was innocent. I go, then why did you tell me your name was Ray Gazarian and not Raz McManaskin? And he looks down. He goes, I never told you that. And I cracked him again. And I mean, I just wanted to pound on this guy. And I took it. I mean, I smashed his iPhone. I was messing him up. And then I was just so pissed off that he couldn't even admit what he did. Here he is still lying to me. It's just fucking believable. And then cops came, but because we were between cars, they didn't see me. And Ray's over there on the ground laying there like just playing possum. I mean, I got some good street corner licks on him. But when I went back to my car, I was like, fuck, I lost my keys. So I had to go back. And here's Ray still laying on the ground. I'm like, hey, man, you know where my keys are?
No, it's just... Well, listen, bro, here's what we're going to do. I want to tell you this is the truth, bro. This was an unbelievable interview. You were a gazillion times better than you were on the show. You told way more. We'll definitely keep in touch. I got your phone number. I'm going to play your song right now. Tell everyone where they can get it, and then I'll finish up the interview. You want to tell everybody where they can get your song first? Because I'm going to end the show
with
your song.
It's a song about a douchebag who used to hook up with a chick back in the day, and then years later he thinks he's going to hook up with her again, but she's wised up. She's not having it. So it's called I Don't Think So, but the best way to find it is by going to Amazon or iTunes and typing in my name, Eric Ade, E-R-I-K-A-U-D-E, and just downloading the song. And it's catchy, it's fun. It was produced by the guys from Crazy Town who did Butterfly. So check it out. I'm surprised it came out of my head.
Yeah, Eric, listen, bro, I had a great time, and I'm finishing up the website. I told you I had a ton of different athletes. I'll put your song, I'll put everything on there. Thank you so much, and I'll keep in touch, bro. I can't thank you enough. This was a great time, bro.
Thank you. If anyone's got questions, they can follow me on Twitter, and I'll be happy to answer anything. I don't have anything to hide.
Eric, thank you so much. I'm going to close the show with your song, man. See you later, buddy.
Take care, brother.
Bye.